To really escape the fear of samsara, tasmat bharata sarvatma bhagavan ishvaro harihi shrotavyas kirtitavyascha smartavyascha icchata abhayam. If someone desires abhayam, then he must hear, chant and discuss and remember the name, form, qualities, past tense of the Supreme Lord. And then he says that whether one is whatever may be one's practice, whether he is a Sankhya Yoga Abhyam Swadharma Parinishtaya Janmalabha Parapumsam Ante Narayana Smriti. Ultimately he has to put an end to his other practices and practice pure bhakti only. That's the only way. Then he says that there are many people who have practiced it before, they have given it up, and I am the example. I myself was Parinishtitopi Nairgunya Uttama Shloka Lilaya Krihita Cheta Rajarshe Akyanam Yadaditavan. I myself was perfectly fixed in the Brahman conception, but when I heard the words of Srimad Bhagavatam, it attracted my heart, and therefore very scrutinizingly I learned this Bhagavatam from my father Vyasadev. And my dear Parikshit, I am going to share this very same Bhagavatam with you. If you very faithfully hear it, then the Supreme Lord will become manifest in your heart very soon. So, as I mentioned, this bhakti is the topmost, and amongst the limbs of bhakti, Harihar Namanu Kirtanam is the topmost. And this is so potent that you don't need a very long time to perfect this path. Katvanga Maharaj perfected it only in one muhurta. But you have 7 days, so you can easily perfect this path. But then he said, having said that, there are other popular opinions. Well, in my opinion, bhakti is the topmost sadhana. Sadhana bhakti is the topmost sadhana, and prema is the topmost prayojan. But other people may have other opinions. And one of the popular opinions is that Ashtang Yoga is the topmost sadhana by which you can attain the topmost prayojan of Sahajya Mukti. So let us now discuss this aspect. So he describes about Yama Niyama Dharana, Yama Niyama Asana Pranayama Pratyahara Dharana Dhyana and Samadhi. He describes how one practices all of these. And then he says that then Parikshit Maharaj says that what is this Dharana? What is the dharanashray? What is that auspicious object of meditation for this yogi? And then he says, Yadrishiva Haredasho Purushasya Manomalam. What should the yogi do to deal with these unfavorable impressions? How can he remove it very fast? So then he describes that Jitashvaso Jitasango Jitendriya. Jitasano Jitashvaso Jitasango Jitendriya. Stuli Bhagavato Rope Manas Sandara Yadhya. That he should rectify his posture, regulation of breath and everything. But still, if the impressions are troubling him, then he should not meditate on the Paramatma form of the Lord. Rather, he should meditate on the Virat form of the Lord. And then he describes the Virat form. How the Patala is his feet and the Satyaloka is his head and everything. All the other planetary systems form the various limbs, he describes. And then the Brahmanas are his face, the Kshatriyas are his arms and so on. So basically describing that whatever you see in this material world, everything is covered by this Virat Purusha. And anyone who wishes to progress on the spiritual path by meditating on this Virat Rupa must meditate only on this Virat Rupa that has been mentioned here. The Virat Rupa should be imagined only according to the words mentioned here by me. Any other form if he meditates on, it will lead to his degradation. Like that he has described till now. That's the overview of the first chapter. So, as he is going to speak about these two kinds of yogis, Yeah. Yeah. If Paramatma form is an advanced yogi. Yeah. And your mic is there.
Hare Krishna. So we are studying here that for a bona fide Ashtanga yogi, if he is a neophyte, he meditates on Virat Rupa. If he's advanced, he meditates on Paramatma.
Yeah.
In this way, he can progress towards liberation.
Yeah.
And in modern times, we see meditation, different meditations. Even Buddhist meditate. So here, last sentence is said that if you meditate on anything else, you will get degraded.
Yeah.
So does that mean that any other path, or like, because meditation is a very famous or popular even in modern times?
Yeah.
If you say meditation, people come.
Yeah.
And then we say mantra meditation, or different meditation. No? So many have their different objects of meditation.
Yeah.
So according to this verse, does that mean that it leads to degradation? And not like, common person are very degraded.
Yeah.
And but they come here, at least,
So mantra meditation means, we may call it mantra meditation, but it is not, meditation is not, the word is not just for the Ashtanga yogis. When we say mantra meditation, we are teaching them the bona fide path of japa, Hare Krishna mantra japa. So that is like,
mantra meditation is perfect. I know it is that.
Yeah.
But I am saying that
other
times we see there are so many like Buddhist and different Mayavadis, different. They tell so much. That means that leads to degradation according to this verse.
Yeah, that, yeah, they will. Prabhupada writes in that Yanya Ravindaksha Vimukta Manina verse, he says that they will degrade from their position of imagined superiority. But that they will realize where they really are. So then eventually you will see them doing some material philanthropic activities and things like that, as Prabhupada says in his purports. Like that. Or if he is following the path of Ashtanga Yoga and progresses gradually from Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, etc. and reaches the stage of Dharana where he is meditating on some other, his own imagined form of Virat Rupa, then very soon he will degrade from that stage of Pratyahara. He will degrade from that stage, like that. So now, we saw that there are these two kinds of yogis. So, Srila Goswami has already described the object of meditation of the Virat Rupa meditator. So then, eventually in the second chapter, he will also speak about how this Virat Rupa meditator, by what practice he attains liberation, that he will describe. Then he will describe about the object of meditation of the Paramatma meditator, which means he will describe the Paramatma form. And then he will describe how this Paramatma meditating yogi, by what practice he attains liberation. So these are the four subject matters which are discussed in this first chapter and second chapter. What is the object of meditation of the Virat Rupa meditator and the Paramatma meditator? Two topics. How the Virat Rupa meditator achieves liberation, how the Paramatma meditating yogi achieves liberation. That is the next two topics. So one topic has already been described in the first chapter. What is the object of meditation of a Virat Rupa meditator? The other three topics is the subject matter of the second chapter. So Shukadeva Goswami continues. Shri Shuka Vacha Evam Puradaranayatma Yonir Nashtam Smitim Pratyavaruddhatishtat Tatasa Sarjeda Mamoga Drishtir Yadatya Yatra Vyavasaya Buddhihi. Evam Pura, once upon a time. So Parikshit Maharaj has heard about this Virat Rupa meditation, but he might think, can someone really get benefited by meditating on some imaginary form? So, is it really potent? So, Shukadeva Goswami gives an example. of a very famous personality who meditated on the Virat Roop and he became successful. He gives the example of Brahmaji. Once upon a time, Brahmaji, Dharanaya, by the process of meditation, Vyavasaya Buddhi, he fixed his intelligence and pure vision, Amogha Drishti, Nashtam Smritim Pratyavarudhya, Tushtat. So, once upon a time, Brahmaji forgot how to create after he woke up. So the acharyas explained that it's not that every day when Brahmaji wakes up, he forgets how to create. Some of the days it happens. And it's not that every day, every time he forgets how to create, it's not that he goes up and down the lotus searching. And then every time he hears tapa tapa, and then he performs tapa. So it's not, it does not happen every time. Once upon a time it happened, that's all. There are other days also when he forgets and he is reminded about how to create. This is another such time when Brahmaji forgot how to create. The Supreme Lord inspired him from within to meditate on the Virat Purusha. He meditated on the Virat Purusha and he says that Tata sasarja idam yata pragapyayat nashtam smritim pratyavarudhya. He regained his lost memory and created this universe as he had created before. So, therefore, there are some times when Brahmaji does forget how to create, and there are various ways in which Krishna gives him the remembrance, because Brahmaji is a very sincere devotee. So, the Supreme Lord gives him his remembrance. One another different episode is described by Shukadeva Goswami in the 4th chapter of 2nd canto. In his prayers, he says, once upon a time, Brahmaji forgot how to create. And the Supreme Lord sent one of his spiritual energies, whose name is Vak or Saraswati. This is not the wife of Brahmaji. This is another spiritual potency of Krishna. So, she goes and she reminds Brahmaji how to create. So, like that, there are different episodes. And sometimes Brahmaji does forget how to create the material world. So, he gives him the inspiration by meditating on the Virat Purusha. So, even though here Brahmaji, the example that is given is that it's not that Brahmaji meditated for achieving liberation. Because such practitioners are not so elevated practitioners. So, only the practice is mentioned, but not some famous personalities. You know, such personalities are not so elevated. So, their names do not appear in the Bhagavatam. But Brahmaji is quite famous. So, even though he did not meditate on the Virat Roop for liberation, but nevertheless his name is mentioned because everyone knows Brahmaji. Even though it was for a secondary purpose, but nevertheless to show that this meditation is potent, bona fide, therefore the example of Brahmaji is given.
Can you connect me? Adapter.
Yes, Ashutosh. Previously, Brahma with fixed intelligence and pure vision, after regaining his memory of creation, so it's the acharyas explain. So it is said that this verse describes the intermediate results of yoga or meditation. Brahma gained his lost memory by satisfying the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada says in the purport, therefore, forgetfulness is one attribute which can be overcome by meditation on the Virat Roop. Therefore, if one follows the instructions of Srimad Bhagavatam and meditates on the Virat Roop, then revival of pure consciousness and counteraction of the tendency to forget one's eternal relationship follows. So, we discussed this yesterday. Bhagavatam gives instructions for Virat Roop meditation also. But one who follows the instructions of Bhagavatam to maybe even practice Viratrupa meditation will definitely become a devotee. He will not remain a Viratrupa meditator. That's what Prabhupada also mentions. One who follows the instructions of Bhagavatam and meditates on the Viratrupa, eventually, he says, revival of his pure consciousness of relationship with the Supreme Lord follows. Because that's the purpose of Bhagavatam. To attract people to pure devotional service is the sole purpose of Bhagavatam. After this loss of forgetfulness, then the Vyavasaya Buddhi or Vyavasaya Atmika Buddhi, one-pointed attention to worshipping the Supreme Lord is fixed. This leads to devotional service. And this devotional service is the real liberation. That's what Prabhupada is mentioning. And Prabhupada says, therefore, waking up from the slumber of forgetfulness and situating oneself in loving devotional service. This is true liberation. Muktir hitya anyata rupam swarupena vyavasthitihi. Therefore, liberation is not inaction, but service without human mistakes. So, liberation means not inaction, but it is service without human mistakes. That's what Prabhupada says here. Which means material, service without your material consciousness, not necessarily human. Because he is speaking to humans. Therefore, but someone may say, liberation. What do you mean by liberation? Merging into Brahman. So, in Brahman, will there be Somaras? Will there be Apsaras in that Brahman? What about Nandankanan Gardens? So, all these facilities will be there in Brahman or not? No, none of this will be there. So then what kind of a destination you are talking about? It's not so really inspiring to go there. I would like to go to Swarga. So some people consider that going to Swarga and enjoying the benefits of Swarga, or maybe remain in this Bhuloka only and enjoy a lot of wonderful material facilities. Some people think that that is the goal of life. So, this is karma kandiya vichar, as Prabhupada says. So, what does Shukadeva Goswami have to say about this karma kandiya vichar? So, while describing this path of liberation, in between for 2-3 verses, he criticizes this karma kandiya vichar and then moves forward. So he says, Shabdasya hibrahmana esha tanta yan nama birdhyayati dhirapartaihi paribrahmam satranavinda tertam maya maya vasanaya shayanaha. Shabdasya hibrahmana esha tanta. This path of the Shabda Brahma, the Vedas. Here the Vedas refers to the Karmakandi section of the Vedas. Yad namabir dhyayati dihi, in which the intelligence concentrates on various names. So, they are names, they are called only names because you may say that I want to go to Swarga or I am staying in Swarga. When the night of Brahma arrives, that Swarga itself vanishes. That Swarga is a name only. The actual Swarga is not there. So, like that, you may say that I want to, though it's a very hot day, you know, I want to eternally immerse myself in the swimming pool. So, we don't know 10 years from now, 5 years from now, if that swimming pool will be there. Maybe the plan might change, they may remove that swimming pool and do some other construction there. We never know. So, or we may ourselves in this body may not survive for the next 5 or 10 years. So, he says that the Karmakandi section of the Vedas, they, through their flowery words, they recommend all these kinds of intermediate destinations, which are all in names only. Yamimam Pashpitam Vacham Pravadanti Avipashchitaha Vedavadaratatvartha Na Anyadastiti Vadinaha. So those who read these flowery words of the Karmakandiya sections, they say, Na Anyadasti. There can be nothing higher than this. Huh? Somaras and Nandankanan gardens, you know, what can be higher than this? You don't have any of this in the Brahman. And why are you recommending this for me? So they cannot relate. Their mind is completely entangled in this flowery language of the Vedas. Apa Arthaihi, even though from, you know, they are useless because they are not eternal. Shayana, a sleeping person, Maya Maya Vasanaya, desiring illusory happiness, does not enjoy objects as he wanders around in his dream. This is not true happiness also. This is like a very illusory happiness. Any material enjoyment is like the illusion. It's an illusion only. Because living entity cannot enjoy matter at all by his because of his constitution. So therefore, the avidya potency of Mahamaya makes him imagine material happiness. It's just an imagination. So like that. So therefore he says that this path of this Karmakandiya vichar is very, very unintelligent vichar. It only suggests some whatever result that it is promising, it's a result in name only, because it is not eternal. Let's say, just like when someone goes to Swarga at the last second of Brahmaji's life by his piety, by the strength of his piety, there is a possibility that, you know, I am going to Swarga, and on the way only Brahmaji starts sleeping, let's say, hypothetically. So he will never reach there. From there he will be diverted to inside the body of Karnataka Sai Vishnu. He will never reach that Swarga only. He will have to wait for another so many billions of years to actually come out and go back to that Swarga. So it's a very temporary thing. And even if he may reach Swarga, he can stay there only till his karma allows. Shine Punya Martalokam Vishanti. So while he is telling someone that, oh, this Swarga life is very wonderful, while speaking that only, he might start dropping down to Martaloka. So like that. So here Shukadeva Goswami says that what kind of, don't even suggest this as a possible alternative. I don't want to speak too much. The path of liberation I'll speak. The means to attain that about Ashtanga Yoga I'll speak. But the path of Karmakanda, I don't even want to speak about it. It's not worthy. So I'll just mention one or two words. I will mention the futile nature of attempting to go to these, to enjoy these temporary things like that. Yes. Muktakeshwar, can you pass the mic?
We heard that after every Manvantaras, the demigods and Indras changes.
Yeah.
So, and also we hear that according to, as karma gets exhausted, they come down. So, like in between, like what exactly happens?
Oh, those demigods who are appointed as in charges for various things, they retain their post for the whole Manvantara. But other living entities who through the strength of piety go to these various planets to enjoy for a while, they come back after their piety gets over. That's the understanding. Okay. Atha kavir nama. Can you pass the mic? Acharya.
in one day of Brahma, there are 14 Manus, 14 Indras, 14. So after that, one, like Indra, post, again he comes back.
That Indra who was there, it depends probably, because next Indra would be Bali Maharaj.
I'm saying so, principle, I'm not talking about specific.
Yeah, it depends on, see, that person who is occupying that post, it depends on his spiritual development. So, how much ever he has spiritually developed, accordingly his destination will be decided. So, we cannot say that that Indra will come back or may not come back, depending on if, while occupying that post, if he has had the association of a pure devotee, then from there only he will go back. So, like Bali Maharaj, definitely, you know, he is already a pure devotee. So, he will occupy that post of Indra, because he had performed 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas. So, just for others, because other people who are endeavoring on the path of performing 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas, they will see, oh, Bali Maharaj performed it, but still he did not get the post of Indra. So, do this process work or not? But Bali Maharaj is no longer desiring that post of Indra. Swarga Apavarga Narakesha Api Tulyartha Darshana. Send me to where you want me to be in Swarga, no problem. I'll stay there for a while, no problem. While there also, I will worship the Supreme Lord. So, like that. Same with Dhruva Maharaj also. He did not want that, you know, if he is not given, then people say, why should I worship the Supreme Lord? Dhruva Maharaj performed such tremendous tapasya, but the Lord did not give him that abode, did not make him the king. Instead, he just took him back to Vaikuntha. What kind of an injustice? Like that they may feel, those who do not have an appreciation of the abode of the Lord. So, in order to not disappoint such people, the Lord allowed Dhruva Maharaj also to rule for a while, for a long while actually. But still, for Dhruva Maharaj it does not really matter. Because he is a pure devotee, wherever he is, Vishwam Purna Sukhayate. For a pure devotee, he doesn't feel distress staying in this material world. Because he is quite absorbed. Tad virya gayana mahamrita magna chitta. Shocheta to vimukacheta sa indriyartha. His only distress is seeing other people not taking up to Krishna consciousness. And he sees, oh, this world is an opportunity. I have service everywhere. So he is always happy. So rather if he goes to Vaikuntha and there is no one to preach to, no service, then he feels little diyamanam nagrananti vinamat sevanam jana. Salokya sashya, all that fine. Is there service or not? That much you tell me. If there is no service, don't send me there. Like that. अत कविर्नामसुयावदर्थः स्यादप्रमत्तो व्यवसाय बुद्धिः सिद्धेऽन्यतार्थेन यतेत तत्र परिश्रमं तत्र समीक्षमाणः. अतः therefore व्यवसाय बुद्धि being fixed in determination and अप्रमत्तः स्यात् being very attentive to his goal, the wise man will take नामसुयावदर्थः in this world of names. In this world of names, he will accept only that which is needed to keep his body and soul together so that he can perform his sadhana. Just because everything is a world of names, it does not mean that he rejects everything. That is Mayavad. Brahma Satya Jagan Mithya. We also say that there is an element of mithya there. But the material world is not mithya. Our perception of this material world is a mithya. The way we relate to this material world is a mithya. But the material world itself is not mithya. Just like when you wear green glasses and you see everything green, so you cannot conclude that, I am seeing everything green because I am wearing green glasses, therefore nothing exists. That's not a very prudent conclusion. So the conclusion, a reasonable conclusion is, everything looks green because I am wearing green glasses, but when I am not wearing green glasses, probably not everything will look green. That's a reasonable conclusion. But to conclude, they conclude that, why is everything looking green? Because I am wearing green glasses. No? So when the green glass is not there, then nothing will look, then nothing exists, right? That's the wrong conclusion. They have such an argument that, you know, a very interesting argument. They say, very convincing argument also. Mayavadis. Their argument is, very carefully leave out all your Vaishnava bias and with a neutral mindset hear this argument. Okay. We are not Vaishnavas now while you are hearing this. They say that let us assume there is a person who is born blind, born deaf, and born with all the indriyas not functioning. Okay. This is life air is there. So, when you say that, when you tell him that, oh, this is yellow in color or blue in color, can he relate to it? He cannot relate to it, right? Because he has never seen any colors in his life, right? So, and let us say if that person, apart from being blind, he also does not have the capacity to taste. His tongue is not functional. So when you say that, oh, this is sweet, can he relate to it? No. This is sour, this is bitter, he cannot relate to it. So the varieties in terms of taste, he cannot relate to it because he does not have the tasting ability. The tongue is non-functional. And he does not have the variety with respect to colors and vision because the eyesight is not there. Right? And you may say that, oh, you see, this seems, this cloth is very soft. This cloth is too coarse. So these kind of sensation also, let's say he does not have the sensation of touch. So, he cannot relate to what is the variety in terms of touch, like this is very cooling in touch, this is very hot, this is very coarse, this is very fine. So, that kind of variety with respect to touch is not there because he was born without the sensation of touch. And smell, similarly, oh, this smells very sweet, this smells like mogra, this smells like rose, this smells like kesar. If he does not have the ability to smell, like for example, our Varang Dashantavu always says that the Lord somehow never gave me the ability to smell. For me, if someone says, wow, Prabhu, this sabji smells so fragrant, for me, I cannot relate to it at all. I don't have the sense of smell at all. Or he may be able to smell but not able to distinguish. He says that the Lord compensated it by giving me the sense of eyes, you know. So, he can see, he can dress nicely, he can paint nicely, he can, you know, do his, you know, designing and all that nicely. So, the Lord compensated him with his darshan by giving him the very powerful sense of seeing. So, let's say if someone is born with none of these senses functioning. So then, he does not have any sense of material variety with respect to touch or form or taste or smell. Nothing. Isn't it? But we all have it. Why? Only because we have a functioning material gross and material subtle senses. in the absence of functioning gross and material senses, that person cannot experience material variety at all. Isn't it? So, material variety is due to what? Material senses. So, but material senses do not belong to the living entity. It's an imagination. So the material variety or the universe with all kinds of material variety in itself does not exist. It exists only because we have material senses. In the absence of material senses, so in the liberated stage, there is no existence of this material world. Correct, no? That is the argument. So if you put down your Vaishnava God and neutrally hear this, it's a very reasonable argument actually. But we say, what you say is right. But how do you know that this person's spiritual, just because he is born blind, born deaf, born dumb, without the ability of taste and all that, which means that his ability to taste material varieties is not there. But you cannot say that there is no spiritual variety at all. So, the material with endowed with all these material senses, we can come to the conclusion that the material world does not look, is perceived the same way as it actually is. But you cannot say that the material world does not exist at all. That's a very unfair conclusion. Just like when I remove the green glass, not that the whole material universe I stop seeing, just that I may stop seeing it green. The same way when the material senses are all removed, one may not stop visualizing this material world, but one may stop visualizing it the way he would visualize it with the material senses. That's all. So, therefore here he is telling that therefore the person who is fixed in his goal of liberation or a higher goal must accept only that which is needed to maintain his body and soul together and then continue on his path of emancipation or liberation. Na yateta siddhe anyatarte. He should not attempt to support himself by other means. Parishramam tatra samikshamana. Since it requires unnecessary labor. Anything more than what it takes to keep your body and soul together, then you will end up performing more and more activities to then rajogun will set in. So sattvagun means accepting only that is barely needed to progress in one's pursuits. A desire to accumulate anything more than that goes into the realm of rajogun. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the symptom of rajogun is lobaha pravrittir arambha karmanam ashamaspriha rajasyetani jayante vivrade bharatarishabha. He says, how do you identify the growth of our rajas? How do you identify that rajas is increasing? He says, first is, it starts out with lobha. Something that you need, you want to accumulate much more than what you need also for future. So that lobha, that lobha is the first stage. Then, next is pravritti. To fulfill that lobha, you will start acting. You will start working for it. Instead of working on your path of liberation, you will start working on accumulating these things. This I will need for support, this I will need for support. Which means you spend your whole life building the support system and never spend any time working on the ultimate goal for which the support system may be needed. Then pravritti leads to arambha. Arambha means extreme hard work. Extreme hard work. Arambha. Arambha means, here it means intense endeavor.
intense hard work to retain what you have and to attain what you may need. And then that leads to karmana vashamaspraha, where you are so engrossed that your senses are helplessly attached to the sense objects, and even if you want, you cannot remove the senses from the sense objects. That is the highest stage. Lobha leads to pravritti, pravritti leads to arambha, arambha leads to karmana mashamaspraha. The peak of rajas is addiction. Karmanam ashamaspraha. Spraha means desire. Ashama means insatiable desire to engage the senses with the sense objects. So from that is the peak of rajas, addiction. And from there on it leads to downhill. Lobha, pravrtir, arambha, karmanam ashamaspraha, peak of rajas. From there it is tamas. So that intense activity will hook him so much to sense gratification that because of that sense gratification he will lose the ability to act only. The pendulum will swing the other way. Action, 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 and he will become completely inactive. Pramada, alasya, nidra. He will go into the zone of tamas. From intense action to inaction. So rajas naturally degrades if not checked, if not replaced by mode of goodness. Rajas eventually escalates to tamas. So any kind of addiction eventually leads to one's ability to act only. Whether it is addiction to intoxicants or anything, any kind of addiction makes one completely dead. In one sense, like that. So, so he says that one should understand that anything more than trying to accumulate anything more than what it needs, what one needs to progress in spiritual life, will lead to very quickly. That person will not just act; he will start acting more and more harder and harder and harder and harder, and eventually his mind will be completely absorbed in only sense gratification. So therefore, he says that the intelligent person will accept only what is needed to maintain his body and soul together and work on emancipation, work on the path of liberation. That's what he is telling. Srila Prabhupada writes here in the purport, since an intelligent person, that is a devotee, knows well, he is not interested in creating unwanted things for a situation which is not at all a reality. Everything is but simply names of no more significance than the bubbles of the sea waves. They will come and go, like that. Human life is meant for tattva jigyasa. Therefore, every second is valuable. Therefore, a civilization that aims at this utmost perfection never indulges in creating unwanted things. You see, our life, this is the nature of Rajogun, and especially Rajogun, that it makes you think that what was once a luxury very soon becomes a need. Like there were times when, you know, I remember when I was in college, weekly once I used to go in the STD booth. I don't know if you have even seen an STD booth. So they are like extinct now. I used to, every Sunday I used to go and call my parents, because Sundays, we had like half the rate. at that time. STD coils were half the rate. So Sunday, I used to call my parents. So I used to go to the STD booth and stand in a long line. And then if you talk for longer than 3 minutes, the person standing next to you will don't like that. And I will say, please, 2 more minutes like that. And then you have to, talk for a little longer. Yeah. Those were the days. Things were fine. Everything was happening. We survived. Passed the exams. And got my degree. Went on further. Everything happened. But in today's day and age, can you even imagine without cell phone? What to speak of cell phone? Can you imagine without smartphone? No. People can't imagine life without smartphones now. So therefore, what was once luxury now has become a necessity. That's the nature of rajas. And then it will make you work harder and harder and harder and harder till you become addict. Nowadays, this smartphone culture is a culture of addiction, you can see. Even children, they can't stay away from it. At a flick of a finger, everything is available. So somehow, it's obsessive compulsive disorder. You have heard of this? OCD, they call it. Obsessive compulsive disorder is it's a kind of behavioral disorder, mental disorder, where one is very compulsively acting in a particular way. They will, every 1 minute they will go and wash their hands. Whatever they touch, they will go and wash their hands. One way in which it manifests, there are so many other behavioral traits. Or something like that. So they have, and now this smartphone thing is also almost like an OCD only. You go, you travel in trains and all that. People are like so hooked up completely. And now there's some recent research in NIMHANS, Bangalore. National Institute of Mental Health and something like that. That's a very famous. They have performed research and they have found that when someone's, especially after the introduction of smartphones, after 2012-13, they have observed that someone who has really got into it, when you take the smartphone away, the withdrawal symptoms that are seen in that person is very similar to the withdrawal symptoms of a drug addict. When a heroin or a cocaine addict, when at the time when he gets that urge to take that drug, at that time you lock him inside a house, don't give him any of this thing. After some time, the kind of symptoms that he gets, withdrawal symptoms, he cannot survive. So that kind of actual emotions people are going through. So, and at least adults used to take the drugs and show some such kind of symptoms. Nowadays, children are showing such symptoms. So therefore, the nature of Rajogun is that slowly it will make you feel that, this is not sufficient. You need more. You need more. What was once a luxury, it will keep on making it as your need. You need it and make you work harder and harder for that till you totally forget the goal of life and enter into tamas. So, that's what he says, that parishramam, Prabhupada writes here, human life is meant for tattva-jidyasa, therefore every second is valuable. Therefore a civilization that aims at this utmost perfection never indulges in creating unwanted things. They just follow the principle of making the best use of the bad bargain. That is, material body is a bad bargain. Therefore, while you have one, use it for self-realization. That is, making best use of the bad bargain. Don't create unnecessary necessities.
which will distract you from your path of self-realization. Like Maharaj, Raghunath Swami Maharaj gives this example of, you know, sometimes you may have to use a thorn to remove, one thorn to remove another thorn. But if you are not an expert, then you will end up with two thorns on your feet. And then you will get the third thorn to remove the first two thorns, and you will end up with three thorns in your feet. So therefore we should be careful with all these things. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, the transcendentalist is specifically warned here that to be fixed in mind, so that even if there is difficulty in plain living and high thinking, he will not budge even an inch from his stark determination. It may be difficult, but he should not budge even an inch from his stark determination. For a transcendentalist, it is a suicidal policy to be intimately in touch with the sense gratifiers of the world, because such a policy will frustrate the ultimate gain of life. Shrivati Goswami met Parikshit Maharaj when the latter felt a necessity for such a meeting. It is the duty of a transcendentalist to help persons who desire real salvation and to support the cause of salvation. One might note that Shrivati Goswami never met Maharaj Parikshit while he was ruling as a great king. For a transcendentalist, the mode of activities is explained in the next shloka. So, what does it mean to accept only that which is needed for keeping the body and soul together? What does it mean? So, Shukadeva Goswami describes this in two verses. Satyam shitau kim kashipo prayasai bahau swasiddhe hita barhanai kim satyam jalau kim purudanna patra digval kaladau sati kim dukulaihi. He says, Satyam kshitau kim kashipo prayasir. When earth is there, what is the need of a bed to sleep? Baho swasiddehi upabarhanai kim. When you have your hands, you can keep your hands as the pillow to sleep. Why do you need a pillow? Satyam jalau kim purva anna patra. You have two hands. If you are feeling hungry, go pluck a fruit and eat. Why do you need many, many vessels to cook and eat cooked food? Not needed. Dik bal kaladav. There are the four directions available. Why do you need dress? But if you feel little not so convenient or comfortable without wearing any dress, then the tree barks are there. So you wear tree barks. What is the need for clothing? Why do you need clothing? Someone may say that, I can wear tree barks, I don't mind. But during winter season, it may be a little bit cold. So if some proper clothing is there, you know, I can. So he says, Chirani kim patina santi dishanti diksham naivang ripatara bruto saritopya sushyan ruddaduha kimajito vatino pasannan kasmat bhajanti kavayo danadur madandan. So if you want clothes, are there not torn clothes on the road? You pick up some torn clothes and wear? I will wear torn clothes, no problem, but when I feel hungry, what will I do? Naivangripa parabruto dishanti diksham. Angripa means trees. Because they drink through their feet, through the roots. Tatatarar mula nishechanena. You pour water in the root and all the other parts, they will get the water. Right? So, have the trees stop giving charity? Go and pluck a fruit and eat. Who is stopping you? Agar mujhe pyaas laga to, saritaha api asushyam. Have the river beds become dry? They are not so during the time of Parikshit Maharaj and
Shukadeva Goswami, but maybe Shukadeva Goswami would have spoken the same verse now. He would have, you know, because most of the river beds are lying dry now, especially in South India. So then one may say, where will I live? So Shukadeva Goswami says, Ruddha Guhakim. Have all the caves in the mountains, have they all put a no let, you know, no vacancy sign? There are so many caves, go and stay there. So why do you have to build a house? Why do you have to purchase land? All of that is not necessary. Then one may say, oh, I don't mind staying in caves as long as only I am staying there. What if some tiger or lion also feels that he also wants to use that cave as a dwelling place? Then how will I survive? Then at this point, Shukadeva Goswami is really frustrated. So he says, Ajito Avatina Upasannan. Has Krishna given upon his words? Name Bhakta Pranashyati. He has given his words. Don't you have faith that Krishna will protect? So, with a sense of disbelief, Shukadeva Goswami is asking, don't you believe in Krishna's words? What is that? Pratijnyatava Govinda Name Bhakta Pranashyati. Iti samsmritya samsmritya pranan sandharayamyaham. Mother Draupadi says, my dear Krishna, you gave the pratigya that name bhakta pranashyati. Iti samsmritya samsmritya, only meditating on this one pratigya of yours I am maintaining my life. So Shrida Goswami is asking that, has the Lord given upon his vow? He promised that he will protect his devotees. Don't you believe? So like that. Kasmat bhajanti kavayo dana durma dandan. So therefore, why should wise people go and try to flatter rich people for their own sustenance? This is not the life of a sadhu. So, His Holiness Raghunath Swami Maharaj also, while guiding the preaching projects, he always emphasized that we are not here to raise funds. We are here to raise friends. It's not friend fundraising. He says, call it friend raising. Because a sadhu must constantly be in the mode of giving. He can receive, he is in the mode of receiving only one thing. Mercy. Mercy, guidance, these things he receives from his superiors. But he is not in the mode of receiving money. He is in the mode of giving transcendental knowledge. He is in the mode of giving Krishna consciousness. So, the definition of success of a preacher is, if that person accepts Krishna consciousness, that is the success. Whether in return he gives money or not, that should not be the yardstick. If that is a conscious yardstick, then a sadhu cannot perform his job in the proper consciousness at all. So ultimately, the mood should be to give. That how nice it would be if he receives Krishna consciousness. And what is the success of preaching? If he receives Krishna consciousness. And later, if he feels inspired to reciprocate by contributing something, we may engage him in Krishna service. But that is optional. But the mood should always be to give. And the success of that, and the success of preaching is if people accept Krishna consciousness. Not a single penny may come out of it. That's, but it's definitely not that way. Definitely something will come back. Because everyone has that desire to show their gratitude
in some way. But if there is, if one, instead of fundraising, if one gets into this full fundraising mode, then one will always see people, one will always see oneself as the receiver. Then that sort of, it's a material emotion and it will slowly degrade into lack of self-esteem. Because beggars don't have any self-esteem, in one sense, if you see. So always the preacher should have the mood of being the giver. And if something comes, it's for Krishna's service. Let it be used in Krishna's service. And the success of preaching is in acceptance of Krishna consciousness and not in receiving in return like that. So, Srila Prabhupada commenting on these two verses, he says, human energy is spoiled in a search after unwanted necessities. If we study the animals, they have no intelligence to make any comforts for their eating, sleeping, mating, etc. But still they are very healthy and happy. But one may say that, so you mean to say that we should also live like animals roaming around naked? So what do you mean? Yes, no, no. Since human beings have higher intelligence, we should use it for self-realization and not just for increasing our comforts. Otherwise, such a civilization is under the clutches of Maya. Great sages of the past lived in simple huts, but they left a great wealth of literatures. Therefore, the so-called comforts of life are not helpful for progress in civilization. Therefore, the sincere followers are recommended to follow a life of voluntary renunciation. If one is not trained for it from the beginning, then one can start it later also. So, if one from the beginning has not been trained in a life of voluntary renunciation, then one can take up to the, such a life at a later stage of life also. But ultimately one should be convinced that this is the way one should conduct oneself. Later in the fifth verse, Prabhupada says, and the renounced order is not meant for begging or living at the cost of others as a parasite. So one should feel very much uncomfortable spending other people's money for one's own comfort. Renounced order is meant for enlightening the householders on topics of self-realization. They should contribute in the form of literatures. But if one cannot contribute in this way, he should not go for begging. Otherwise, it is an insult to the renounced order. If you have nothing to give, then you have nothing to beg for. Don't go for begging. It's an insult to the renounced order, like the Prabhupada is mentioning. Therefore, Sukadeva Goswami is especially speaking this verse for such mendicants. And the life of a mendicant means, Prabhupada says, he is convinced of two principles. One is, Rakshati iti Vishwaso Gotritve Varanam. Having full faith that Krishna is the protector and Krishna is the maintainer. One should have full faith in that. Therefore, an ideal sadhu is one who does not even beg. Ayachita vritti. Like that. And Prabhupada writes, so therefore, for whom is the path of renunciation recommended? Who should be practicing a path of renounced life? Prabhupada says, it is recommended for one who is fully accomplished and fully purified in his existence. Who is such a person who is fully accomplished and fully purified? He says, one who has accumulated the qualities of Daivi Sampad. Abhayam Satta Samshuddhir Jnana Yoga Vyavasthitihi Dhanandamascha Yajnascha Swadhyayastha Parjavam and so on. Daivim Sampad Vimokshaya Nibandaya Asurimata. First quality is Abhayam and so on. Then Prabhupada explains these various qualities. A sannyasi should not be afraid to live alone. But then he says, how does one develop this quality of being fearless? He says, by sattva samshuddhi. Sattva samshuddhi means when the heart becomes pure. So fear is due to dvitiya abhinivesh. And dvitiya abhinivesh is due to maya potency. And maya starts acting when we turn our face away from Krishna. So when we turn our face towards Krishna, then slowly that dvitiya abhinivesh goes away and one becomes fearless. As this morning, His Grace Gaurang Prabhu was also mentioning. Fear means Krishna's desire minus my desire. If the remainder is zero, then it means there is no fear like that. Okay, so let's move ahead. It's already 1:30. Maybe 5-10 minutes extra will go. Is it okay, bro? Evam svachitte svatayeva siddha atma priyorto bhagavan anantah tam nirvuto niyatarto bhajeta samsara hetu paramaschayatra evam svatah. Thus, yes, bro. Can you pass the mic? Acharya.
Hare Krishna. Add just one comment about this regarding fundraising.
Yeah.
Because ISKCON is a very huge organization.
Yeah.
And a lot of funds we may see coming in.
Yeah.
But as a practitioners, we may not ask funds or we may not depend on that. But when we see so many people raising funds,
yeah,
and helping project, we should also appreciate that particular devotee for their service. Because sometimes what happens when you read such verses, devotees may not appreciate that service. For example, somebody does cow seva, people may say, oh, wonderful, he's doing go seva, so nice. Somebody is doing deity worship, they may appreciate him. But sometimes some brahmachari may have fundraising seva. They may look up and down and not appreciate the seva. And that can cause some, you know, this thing. So sometimes he may go for begging. And begging as a brahmachari is a duty on correct behalf of guru. May not be begging for himself.
Yeah.
But for the sake of, you know, guru's mission. So in every temple, we have some fundraising department.
Yeah.
The attitude of fundraiser may be different, you know. But as other general devotees and all these things, I just wanted that, no?
Yeah.
Because such verses, sometimes, when we quote, at least I have seen many issues happening. So I'm just, it's very good for us as brahmacharis. But at same time, especially those devotees, brahmacharis, or sometimes grihasthas doing that seva, we appreciate that anyone, you know, we don't look down upon the service that everybody need, we don't need with this like that.
Yeah. So the and point that I was mentioning was that the mood should be to give and not not necessarily, you know, receive, because even they will be able to sense it. So that you know, ultimately it should be an the fund should come as a result of the feeling of gratitude from the person who is giving. So that when he feels that he has received something very valuable, and for which as a token of gratitude he is giving something very insignificant for the pleasure of the Lord, you know, that's like a very,
that's first class charity.
First class charity. Yeah.
But in ISKCON we also second class, third class, in most last class charity also.
Yeah.
And sometimes devotees may also do that.
Correct.
Sometimes devotees may not do that. So they may inspire your materialistic person, give materialistic reason to doubt all their propensities, so that to fulfill some materialistic projects.
Correct.
So, no?
Yeah, correct, correct. And that way he is just following his authority. That way he is following a higher principle.
of you know, Krishnaika Sharanam, surrendering to Krishna, will of Krishna that is coming through a devotee. So whatever he has, he does. So he is not independently doing it also in that sense. So he says, thus being situated in this way in which it was described in the last two verses, which means accepting only what is necessary to maintain the body and soul together, when one is so detached that he needs nothing from the society and so when that when a person is situated with that kind of a mentality, then the Supreme Lord appears spontaneously in his heart. So he has used this discussion to develop into the qualification that is needed for a yogi to meditate on the Paramatma form of the Lord. So if he is so detached that he can live a life while barely accepting what is needed to maintain the body and soul together, then in the heart of such a devotee, the Paramatma form spontaneously appears for him to meditate upon. Tam nirbhuto niyatartho bhajete samsara hetu paramascha yatra. The yogi filled with bliss and aiming for prema should worship him. By this worship, ignorance, the cause of repeated births, is destroyed. Kastam tvanadritya paranuchintam rite pasho nasatim nama kuryat pashyanjanam patitam vaitaranyam swakarmajan parita panjushanam. So, here it is mentioned that otherwise giving up such a noble path of liberation. If people engage in this path of material sense enjoyment, pashyan janam swati patitam vaitaranyam, even after seeing that people of this material world, after engaging their lives in materialistic activities, you know, patitam vaitaranyam, falling into hellish life, even after seeing it, if a person gives up this path of liberation and engages in a life of sense gratification, so then he must be considered as an animal. Rite pashun, other than an animalistic person, who would choose this kind of a lifestyle? Tam anadritya, while disregarding bhakti or a devotional disposition towards the Lord within the heart, if one gives that up and lives a life for accumulating only material necessities, then that's the life of an animal. Asatim nama kuryad. Instead, if he meditates on the temporary objects of this world, which are in names only, like that. Srila Prabhupada also mentions the same thing in the purport. He says, Pashun. Pashun means animals. So Prabhupada says, the Vedas say that demigod worshippers are like animals who follow their herdsmen to the slaughterhouse. So the demigods themselves, Yanti Deva Vrata Devan. So death, the devata's abode is also not permanent. So their worshippers also go to that abode, and after the at the time of Brahmaji's night, they all are stripped of their position. Like that. Anyone who doesn't take shelter of the Supreme Lord is suffering in this material world either as A class, B class, C class, or D class prisoners. Therefore, an enlightened transcendentalist worships the absolute truth in different stages of realization, Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. And he doesn't think that better than a D-class prison cell is a A-class prison cell. Which means, Swarga is better than Bhuloka. That is like a prisoner mentality. I have lived here for 4 years. Abhi wohi cell mein hai, abhi could I have, you know, improve my facilities? Yes, purpose is to get out. Focus on that instead of trying to increase and improve your facilities. That's what Prabhupada is mentioning. So, how does that Lord who naturally appear within the heart of this person look like? So, the description of the Paramatma, that is the next section. We'll quickly go through these verses and end. Kechit swadehantar hudayavakashe pradeshamatram purusham vasantam chaturbhujam kanjaratanga shanka gadadaram dharanaya smaranti. Kechit dharanaya smaranti. So, some yogis who are qualified to meditate on this Paramatma, they meditate on Pradesha Matram Purusham. Pradesha Matram means one Pradesha, Prabhupada mentions 8 inches. So the size of Paramatma is mentioned to be 8 inches. Okay. So you may ask, what about the Paramatma in the heart of an amoeba or an ant? His size is also 8 inches. And that Paramatma is the one Andantarastha Paramanu Chayantarastham. That Paramatma is the same personality who is existing between two Paramanus also. And what is his size? 8 inches. How? Not everything is conceivable. Like we discussed the other day, if one thinks that everything about the Supreme Lord should be conceivable to my material intellect, then it is mentioned that such a person has not even stepped into the path of bhakti. Bhakti starts with accepting that something will remain inconceivable. So in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it is described that certain things about the Lord as not having birth but still taking birth, as not performing activities and still performing many pastimes. He says that these things are inconceivable even for the pure devotees. So certain things are inconceivable for Jiva Tattva in whatever stage they may be, liberated stage or perfected stage or conditioned stage. Certain things are inconceivable for the conditioned souls. And certain things, more they progress in bhakti, more and more things become conceivable. But certain things will remain inconceivable even after reaching the stage of Shantaras, Dasiras, Sakyaras, Madhuriras, perfected stage of relationship. So one has to accept it. And a pure devotee is not really bothered about it. He appreciates when something he is able to conceive, he celebrates that by glorifying the Supreme Lord. When something is inconceivable, he celebrates that also and glorifies the Supreme Lord. So, a pure devotee is concerned about glorification. He is not concerned about grasping the Supreme Lord using his intellect. So, therefore, the Paramatma is 8 inches. And Pradesha Matram, Hridayavakashe Vasantam. He lives in the region of heart. So it's not that every cardiologist gets to take darshan of the Paramatma in the heart of, you know, whomever he open heart surgery that he may perform. He is 8 inches, but he is spiritual, so he's not visible to materialize. And he's holding Shankha Chakra Gada Padma in his four hands. Prasannavatram Nalinayatekshanam Kadamba Kinjal Katushangavasasam Lasan Maharatna Hiranmayangadam Spuran Maharatna Kirita Kundalam. This form has a smiling face, eyes wide like blue lotus petals, cloth yellow like the Kadamba pollen, and the golden armbands with sparkling rubies and earrings and crown made of dazzling gems. Unnidrahritpam Kajakarnikalaye Yogeshwarastapita Padapallavam Sri Lakshmanam Kaustubaratna Kandaram Amlana Lakshmyavana Malayachitam. His two lotus feet are established by the great yogis in the center of the blossoming lotus within their heart. Unnidra Hrit Pankaja Karnikalaye Yogeshwara Astapita Pada Pallavam. He manifests himself within the lotus heart of the yogis. Kaustubha Ratna Kandaram, and in his neck is the Kaustubha Mani. Sri Lakshmanam, and he has the Shrivatsa Mark on his chest. Amlana Lakshmiya Vanamala Yachitam. So he says that he is covered with a flower garland which never fades. Amlana. Mlana means to fade. Murjana. So after Dhruva Maharaj was chastised by Suruchi, it is mentioned that his face was like Parimlana Mukambajam. And his lotus face was completely faded. Parimlana means from all sides. Like that.
Vibhoshitam me kalayanguliyakar mahadanair no punakankana dibihi snigdamala kunchilani chitanila kuntalair virochamananahasapeshalam.
He is decorated with valuable belt, rings, anklets and bracelets. His attractive smiling face is surrounded by spotless, glossy, curly black locks of hair. So like that, the beautiful form of the Paramatma residing within the heart is described. So out of the four topics that we saw, you know, a description of the Dharanashraya of the Virat meditator has already been described in the first chapter. Now the object of meditation of the Paramatma meditator. So the Paramatma form is also described. Because when someone thinks that, oh, actually all these qualities I have, so I'm going to meditate on the form. And if he actually under illusion is imagining some form and meditating on it, so therefore he says that the form that manifests within the heart is this form. Does it match with this form or not? So you can't just imagine some form. So that's why the description is given of the Paramatma form within the heart of the yogi also. So tomorrow, two more themes as I mentioned. How this Paramatma meditator achieves liberation, and how the Virat meditator, he achieves liberation. These two themes we will discuss tomorrow. So for now we will end here. So it's already 15 minutes past the time. So sorry for the delay. Srila Prabhupada ki.